You're listening to Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. Work in Progress explores the rapidly changing workplace through conversations with innovators, educators, and decision-makers, people with solutions to today's workforce challenges. The pandemic and recession are hitting all age groups, demographics, and industries. But for the first time in nearly 50 years, workers who are over 55 are experiencing unemployment at a greater level than those younger than them. And according to a recent survey by AARP, 61% of older workers are concerned that they could lose their jobs this year, and age bias could be a contributing factor. There are a lot of contributing factors to age bias. Today, we're taking a look at how older adults are portrayed in the media and what might be the cause of those characterizations. Joining me to discuss is David Gittins, Executive Director of the nonprofit Age Inclusion in Media, also known as AIM. David, thanks for joining me on Work in Progress.
Thanks for having me, Ramona.
So, David, what is AIM's mission?
Our mission is to champion age inclusivity across all media and entertainment platforms through programs that support career, craft, and growth. And that means we have a vision of seeing a future where talented people of all ages work together to accurately represent age just as a natural part of life. So, in other words, we want to see how age is represented in the media to be one that is less routinely, less stereotypical and dehumanizing.
And that portrayal tends to seep into society just like from any portrayal of any stereotype. It seems that it's important that the people who are writing the characters are reflective of that. And so that's part of your mission, I would imagine.
Absolutely. I mean, what we call it, the cycle of ageism, and what that boils down to four elements of write, show, believe, and do. If you don't write it correctly, it's not shown on screen correctly, then we don't believe it correctly, we form stereotypes, and then we behave as though these false perceptions or reality. How we perceive older people in society comes from many ways from what we see and what we read. And so, yes, absolutely. I mean, with the figures, AARP was publishing this week, it shows you, and with COVID, it shows you that older workers are at the most vulnerable because the perception is they're expensive, they're not very productive, and, they're not very motivated. It transcends the media. In that regard, what we do at Age Inclusion is very important because with the social security crisis on the horizon, we need old workers in the workplace. We can't be having this perception of older people as just being drains on society when the reality is most older people are very, very productive until the last few years of life. If people are retiring or being forced to retire in their 50s and 60s, then we're missing out on a great resource.
What do you see when you see an older person on TV or in the movies right now?
Well, if we were to believe what we see on screen or on TV or, reading books, we would believe that anybody over the age of 50 is just waiting for retirement, who is totally spent, who is just happy to be here. Anybody who's over the age of 65, frankly, is just waiting for death. That would be if we were aliens and all we saw was TV.
You used a phrase in the conversation earlier that it looks like people are not the central characters of their own lives when they're portrayed on TV. Explain that to me again.
In TV writer's room, for example, you don't find many writers over the age of 55. If you're over that age, you tend to be at a producer level. Below that, people who are actually writing the scripts tend to be younger and much younger. That means people in their 20s or 30s, their perception of somebody in their 50s or 60s tends to be of somebody who is a parent or a grandparent. They are not the central character themselves. They are somebody who is a support character in their own lives. So when it gets represented on screen, they are portrayed as purely as being support characters. 40 years ago, you would have a lead character who was like Columbo or, Angela Lansbury in Murder, She Wrote. Through a process of excluding older creatives, we've ended up excluding older portrayals on the screen. So now our lead characters tend to be in their 20s or 30s or early 40s. We very rarely get older characters who are seen as the center, who have central lives, who have hopes and fears like everyone else, and who are just not portrayed as supporting or comedy sidekicks. The best thing in their lives is an occasional time spent with their children. It's as though they don't have aspirations for their own lives. They don't live lives independent of their offspring.
In a workplace, if you had a choice between a younger worker and an older worker, you may go ahead and choose the younger worker because they more resemble you. So do you think that is because of the portrayals on television?
Yeah, absolutely. Because again, it's an easy trope. It's an easy gag. Whereas the reality is an older person may be sometimes more reluctant to take on new technology because the old technology is working fine for them, but they will learn it. I mean, I know a 97-year-old and a 101-year-old who've got iPhones. They read books now only on the Kindle because guess what? They can expand the text and they can read it better than a physical book. So they know technology. And so an idea of somebody who's a bit older not knowing technology is nonsense.
You bring up the fact that in Hollywood, when it comes to creatives, writers, producers, directors, they tend to be younger. They tend to be under a certain age, unless they have achieved, you know, an executive level or a more prominent level in the industry. What impact do you think that's having on what's coming out of the media now?
There's the chicken and egg thing, you know, what we call the cycle of ageism. Younger people who are creatives aim at a younger audience. Advertisers obsess over the younger audience, again, due to the stereotype that older people have made all their life decisions at age 49. And once they cross the threshold to 50, they're set in their ways. So what happens when older voices get excluded is older lives become portrayed as irrelevant, as though it's waiting for death and waiting for retirement, back to those things. It's as though without proper representation in the writer's room, like any other excluded group, it's not going to find itself portrayed on screen correctly.
How do we address this if the people who are doing the hiring are younger and the people they're hiring are younger? How do you break that cycle?
One of the ways we're doing it is we're running a program to train readers, script readers, because script reading over the past 20, 25 years or so has gone from being a very qualified job to being an entry-level job. And it's given to interns or people 1 or 2 years out of college. That means it's going to skew younger. It also means it's going to skew to people who don't get paid or get paid minimum wage. Those factors would mean that older people won't be going for those jobs. If they think they could even get them, they still wouldn't go for them. The impact of that is, if an older writer wants to have a script considered by a production company, he or she is going to have their script read, in the first instance, by the gatekeeper who is maybe 22 years of age. If an older writer is writing a story about a 65-year-old having a traumatic life experience or a great life experience, it may not resonate with the younger reader. That means the script will get passed, and what will get passed on it will be scripts that resonate with the 22-year-old. We're trying to, I would say, flood the market with older readers, people who are willing and able to take on those gatekeeper positions. And that way, when scripts get read with older stories, with older characters, they will get a proper fair read. And so people can slowly learn to appreciate that part of diversity inclusivity is age inclusivity.
So you're preparing older readers. Who's hiring them?
It's a very slow process. At the first instance, we've just run the Silver Bullet screenplay competition, which was aimed at either older writers or stories portraying older characters. That has opened doors for us with production companies and with management companies for when they're next hiring readers or they're next looking for scripts. It's a very slow process to make people realize that there are very many different stories about age and different ages. And the idea that all people of a certain age think in a certain way, which is totally wrong. You know, it's all newborn babies are pretty much the same. All 1 or 2 year olds are fairly similar. But the older we get, the more diverse our life experiences become and the more stories we have to tell. So the idea that anybody who's in the protected class is just a homogenous group, again, is nonsense. But again, we don't win people over by yelling at them. How we do win people over is by showing that there are great stories by great writers, showing great aspects of characters who are just not in their 20s or 30s.
You know, one of the things about being a writer is that you are really your own business. You're your own entrepreneur. So how do you encourage writers, you know, over the age of 30, over the age of 40, over the age of 50, to present their work? How do you encourage them when there is this big challenge and barrier for them?
It used to be writers were very much employees, whereas now it's closer to being, you know, the gig economy. You take a job for a couple of weeks and then you move on. And so we're having to teach people how to, you know, be a bit more hustling. And that's a hard thing to learn, because as writers, we tend to be self-effacing and just hoping that the work will speak for itself. The modern day world, never mind just the modern day entertainment business, is very different. You know, we all need to have updated social media profiles. We need to be interacting on social media. One of the ways we teach writers is, have you connected to a producer or writer on Twitter? Because most of them have 300 followers and they will answer anybody's question about anything. You don't need us to introduce you to a manager or an agent. You should be doing it yourself, because meeting people who like you and your scripts, it's like dating. You can't force it. You can't have an arranged marriage over these things. The producers and buyers have to come to you as well. So they have to know who you are. And the quickest way that people know who someone else is today is we do a bit of a Google stalk on people. We find out what their LinkedIn is. We find out what their Twitter is and their Instagram. If we have a connection, then we'll meet them in real life. These are things which have been a challenge, and it has been meeting with a lot of skepticism. It's often about fear of new. But once we get over that fear of new, we find out that they fall in love again with the business. But most writers, they're in love with writing, never been particularly in love with the business.
One of the things that we see in the workforce when organizations, industries are trying to bring in underrepresented groups, in this case, maybe an underrepresented age group, are mentorship programs. You're doing something like that, correct?
Yes, we've started a mentorship program, which is where we have a team of mentors who are experienced writers in film and television. What we offer is anybody can book one of our mentors to help them with any specific problem to do with the writing or the career process. So if you want to, for example, we've just had somebody, a person who's in their 60s, who really keen to be a late night TV writer for, you know, the talk shows. We've teamed him up with somebody who wrote on The Tonight Show. And this person has been honing their craft, building a packet ready to submit to the late night script editors or producers who do the hiring. And similarly, so it's an open door. It's a paid service because we have to pay the mentors, but it's an open door. If you've been excluded, or you feel so you're too old for a film school, or you don't want the expense of a film school, you can go direct to people who know, who've been there. You can use their experience to shortcut your way to knowing what they know.
One of the things that I like to point out is that with experience comes knowledge. So if you're in a particular field, you have knowledge of, you know, the history of that, you have an institutional memory of it. You also have the ability to solve problems, and you may even have solutions that someone who's new to the industry may not have thought of because you've probably had to deal with it. And I think that's undervalued in a lot of workplaces.
Absolutely. There was a book published, I think maybe nearly 10 years ago, and it's been done as a TED Talk as well. And it was a guy who decided to build a toaster from scratch. absolutely from first principles and built a toaster. He made an absolute mess of it, and it's hilariously bad. In the workplace, we don't need to start every day as though this is day one. It was Matt Weiner when he was running Mad Men. He always insisted on having a much more experienced writer in the room than him. There was one point he decided this after trying to solve a story problem for about 3 months, and then he brought in this guy who fixed it in an hour. And from that point on, he always insisted on having somebody who was way more experienced than he was.
That's excellent. That should be a thought that everybody has in every business and every industry, I think. And one of the things that kind of supports this as well is that entrepreneurs, the most successful entrepreneurs are those who start their businesses in their 40s because they've got 20 plus years of experience in a particular industry, in a particular job, and they know how to turn that into a business.
That's the thing, because when you're in your 40s, you have a better idea of your strengths and weaknesses, and you know the market, and you know what you can do, and you know what you can achieve. Whereas when we're younger, one of the benefits of being younger is we don't. We will dive into many things, not knowing good or bad is going to come out at the end of them. But when we get a bit older, we can use that experience to improve our odds of success.
One of the things that AIM talks about is that age inclusion in the workforce is vital to the sustainability of the American economy. How do you see that?
If we perceive older people as being drains on healthcare, drains on social security, blocking progress for younger people, then that's how we will start to treat them. And we will start excluding people purely on their age. That means we're going to have a huge pool of unemployed adults, people in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. With an aging population, that pool is going to get bigger and bigger until we realize and start treating it as such that older people are very creative, very productive, and they are not just far from being drains on society, they can be very productive to society. They won't be drawing from Social Security, they'll be adding to the Social Security pot. That's why we fit into a wider circle. It's if we write, we show, we believe, we do. So until we start showing that older characters can be very productive, lead very full lives, aren't waiting to go into an adult care facility, then we're not going to believe it, and we won't start treating people who are older as being very creative and very productive and very useful to be around. If you don't have it as any other way, you've got to treat age inclusivity as being the best business decision you will ever make.
I love the also part of your manifesto, which is that real impactful change comes when generations work together to tell a new story. I think the intergenerational workplace, whether it's in a creative field or it's in a factory or if it's in an office, is the future. It really has so, it's unlimitless what you can do.
It's an odd thing how we've become so age segregated. I think many cultures still have it where, you know, multi-generations live in a home, so in the same home. So we get to see different levels of life experience, and it becomes normalized dealing with people of different ages. But when we go to school and college and then work, our peers tend to always be the same age. That means older people tend to be our bosses and younger people tend to be our juniors. It's an odd one because, yes, we can learn all the time from different perspectives, whether that's age, gender, or ethnicity. The most successful corporations are the ones which are inherently inclusive, because anyone that isn't doesn't innovate. And if you don't innovate in business, then you die. The crucial part of innovation is cross-pollination, different perspectives, and age perspectives is one of the most crucial ways and the simplest ways we can resolve this.
David, thank you very much for joining Work in Progress.
It's a pleasure to be here, Ramona.
I've been speaking to David Gittins, Executive Director of Age Inclusion in Media. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. Thank you for listening.